The great 20th century Eastern Orthodox theologian Alexander Schmemann wrote, "Beauty is never necessary, functional, or useful. And when, expecting someone whom we love, we put a beautiful tablecloth on the table and decorate it with candles and flowers, we do all this not out of necessity, but out of love. And the church is love, expectation, and joy." Welcome to another edition of the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College. This is your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. My guess is that we've all experienced a church in which the architecture and/or sacred art was, let's say, unpleasant. Unpleasant to the point of distraction. And we've all had the experience of entering a church whose beauty draws us into the mysteries of the faith and upward to God and into worship. Sacred art can and should have a profound effect on our spiritual lives. David Clayton has been thinking about sacred art for many years. Professor Clayton is an internationally known artist, teacher, author, composer, and broadcaster. He moved to the U.S. from his native England in 2009 and was for several years artist in residence at Thomas More College in New Hampshire, where his icons adorn the college's chapel. Currently, he is provost and founding faculty member of Pontifex University, where he designed their unique Master of Sacred Arts program, a formation in creativity for all and not just artists. His blog and podcast are at thewayofbeauty.org, and his books include Painting the Nude, The Theology of the Body and the Representation of Man in Christian Art, and The Way of Beauty, a book our Wyoming Catholic College seniors read as part of their study of art. David Clayton was here in Lander delivering a lecture to the college last Friday entitled Why Sacred Art is Necessary to the Faith. Saturday morning, before a bit of Wyoming hiking, Professor Clayton was kind enough to record this interview about sacred art and about beauty. Your lecture was about liturgical art. How is liturgical art a subset of sacred art?
Well, the way that I use the phrase, sacred art is art that is intended for some sort of obviously religious purpose. So in the context of the church, that's likely to be something that we pray with, that might be devotions or just for meditating upon, just looking at and thinking about. And then liturgical art is art that the purpose of which is to enrich and direct our participation in the liturgy, in the worship of God. So this would be the Mass and the Divine Office, or in the Eastern Church, of course, the Divine Liturgy and the Liturgy of the Hours. And so usually that means images that we're likely to engage with at particular points in the actual process of worshipping. So it's not simply things that we look at before or after. So these might be images of the feast being celebrated that day. Christ on the cross clearly has an obvious message connected with the sacrifice of the Mass. And so that's how I would define liturgical art.
I've known people in the past who get bent out of shape with pictures of Jesus in little kids' books because that's idolatry. Talk to us about images.
Okay. Well, the Catholic Church teaches that not only are they permitted, but really that they're necessary to our faith, and distinguishes between idols and images that are used properly. And so the misconception that there's something wrong with images, which you mentioned one instance, but it's popped up at various stages in history, it comes from a variety of sources, but the modern manifestation that you hear most commonly comes from what I understand to be a misreading of the Ten Commandments by Calvin.
Yes, this was a Calvinist.
He saw, "Thou shalt not make any graven images." The original Hebrew or Greek, I understand it, I'm not a Greek or Hebrew scholar, but refers specifically to idols, in other words, an image of a false god for worship. And that seems to make sense because immediately after the Ten Commandments, there are instructions on how to make images. So it seems that this is not a blanket endorsement of iconoclasm, of the destruction of images. So that means then that we have to consider carefully. It's not a blanket endorsement either, but we have to consider carefully what images and when and what style of images are appropriate. But certainly they are permitted, and it's a misconception, I would say, to say that they're not.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned it's kind of like family photos. I've heard people say the iconostasis in a Byzantine church is, well, it's like that hallway upstairs where you've got all the pictures of the relatives.
Well, it is. It's like that, but not identical to it. There are key differences. But yes, and one of the things that, it's interesting you brought that up, but when people object to images, one of the things that I ask them is, well, do you honour your mother and father? I'm assuming you do, because we're instructed to do that. And if so, then, do you think it's appropriate to have photographs of your mother and father on the mantel shelf? And when you do that, do you feel that that's some sort of idolatry? And I'm assuming that their answer is no, or if they haven't thought about it before, it's going to make them stop and think. But it is just the same. The key points here are that, first of all, that the reverence that we give the image, it's not reverencing the image, what it's saying is that through the image, that reverence is passed on to the prototype. So if I kiss a photograph of my mother, my late mother, I'm not kissing a photograph or a piece of paper. What really is happening there is that I'm passing that love on to my mother. And it's through my imagination, I'm picturing my mother, who I hope is in heaven. And the same thing happens with the saints. When we kiss an image, icon is just the Greek word for image, of a saint, we're not worshipping the wood and the paint or kissing the wood and the paint so much as what this symbolizes is the love we have for the saint. It's passed through the image. It establishes a relation with the saint themselves. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is that there is a hierarchy here in that we worship God. There are different gradations, I can't think of another word, of love that are appropriate to the person we love. So we honour our father and our mother, but we worship God. They can be just as intense emotionally as we exercise that, but it's a different sort of response to the person. And worship, of course, is the highest expression of love we can have for anything, and it's due only to God, because God is the highest being.
Now, you mentioned in your lecture that Pope Benedict XVI, in his book The Spirit of the Liturgy, talked about three different styles that
yes.
That he felt were appropriate for liturgical images.
Yes.
And what are those?
Okay, so the first thing to say is that he is not speaking infallibly here. So if you have a particular attachment to other forms and disagree, you're entitled to make the argument. You're not bound by this. But as someone who I respect greatly, he said that the three forms are, first of all, the iconographic style. So most of us, when you think of icons, you think of Russian or Greek icons. That's what, if you know what they are at all. But actually, there's a huge variety of styles of iconography. And there are Western traditions of iconography that come that are part of the Roman Church. And you can see many of them in mosaic in churches in Rome, if you go there, for example. But pretty much all Christian art up to the Romanesque period, up to and including the Romanesque period, is faithful to the iconographic tradition. Then he says the Gothic tradition is also appropriate for the liturgy. And the Gothic is the style that it sort of emerged around about the 13th century, the 12th century, there's no clear division in as to when one becomes the other. And then that lasted until the Renaissance, and that is a Western, really a Catholic tradition. So it's one of the great jewels of the Roman Catholic Church, I would say. And then finally, the third style that he says is appropriate is the Baroque, and he qualifies it slightly. He says, at its best. In a way, the Baroque was nipped in the bud. So the Baroque is the art of the 17th century. Perhaps Caravaggio is the one who launched this style most famously in Rome. He popularised it anyway. There are other figures around that time who contributed hugely to its development. But these are artists who took what began in the High Renaissance and transformed it into a full integration of the Christian faith and the classical style that the High Renaissance really focused on to a much greater degree. And I say that it was nipped in the bud because it then almost reverted back to a sort of neoclassicism at the end of the 18th century. It became detached from the church in some way, the artistic traditions. And that's a whole subject as to why this happens, but Benedict describes that. And so I would say that it wasn't fully developed, the scope for further development in that. But the Baroque artists would be people such as Velazquez or Ribera. Guido Reni is a great Baroque artist. And Rubens is also a Baroque artist. So I'm not so keen on his work myself, but he would be part of that tradition.
Well, and you were saying that the iconographic tradition draws you in.
Yes.
Draws you closer. Whereas the Baroque pushes you away and says, in a sense, I'll come to you.
Yes.
Which I thought was fascinating.
Yes. And this is a dynamic that is built into the stylistic elements of the church. So it's something that the artist, if he or she knows what they're doing, will be aware of. The way that this is done, and of course this is we don't have pictures here, so I can't do it in detail, but the Baroque art, it works by being in focus, typically a distance away from the painting, three times the largest dimension of the painting. And this creates then an angle of vision, which means you can see the whole thing without moving your head around, about 15 degrees, something like that. And so they deliberately created so that it's meant to be seen at that distance. If you go closer, it just evaporates into a mass of brushstrokes. You can't make out what's happening. The edges look very rough. They don't look as though they're focused. And that's because when you move away, those rough edges and those rough brushstrokes tend to merge more completely into a whole, if you see what I mean. So that's how it works. And so they deliberately created art that had impact at a distance. And so spiritually, the idea was we're in a fallen world. There is evil, there is suffering. So there's lots of light and dark contrasted in Baroque art. But I am here with you. I'm here beside you. Stay where you are and I will lift you up to heaven. Christ is saying that through the painting. In the iconographic art, there are various artistic devices that are used so that the images always seem distant from us. They're painted, it's about the balance of the relative size and amount of detail supplied is what's going on there, which is quite complicated to explain. But the effect in both iconographic and Gothic art is the same, that when you see the painting, there isn't a foreground that you might get in a 19th century landscape, for example. There isn't something just in front of us. Everything appears in the middle distance or in the far distance. And that means, therefore, that because of the beauty of it, and this is important, it has to be beautiful and we need to be attracted to it, we want to get closer. And so it pulls us in. And there is also this strong stylization which deliberately creates an inbuilt dissatisfaction with what we're seeing in the image, so that we always want more. And Benedict talks about this, that being wounded by beauty, that while we want it, it creates a desire for something more. And that desire ultimately is for the inspiration of all beauty, beauty itself, which is God. And so these visual devices in the icon and in Gothic art draw us in, but always they're saying, this is just an image, it's not enough. It's pointing us to what the prototype, the thing that is imaged, saint in heaven. And so it draws our attention up to heaven. So that sort of art is saying, here I am, come to me. And Baroque art is saying, I see you, let me come to you. Mm-hmm. And in that way, of course, the artists at the time wouldn't have been aware of this. We're in a unique position at this point to be able to look back in history, rather detached from all these traditions, which is a sad thing in many ways. It means they're not living traditions now, really. Well, actually, I qualify it. The iconographic is in the Eastern Church, certainly. But we can look at these traditions and say they're complementary. And today, therefore, we can put them together in a sort of harmonious whole. And when I described that dynamic once to somebody, she said, "Ah, this is like Jacob's ladder. The angels are coming down and the angels are going up simultaneously."
Now, this kind of art is not just, well, Baroque art is probably just for public spaces, but certainly the smaller iconographic art is not just for public spaces.
That's right. I'm not averse to prints, by the way. A good art is as good as it looks, and if you can't tell the difference and all you can afford is a print, then get a good quality print. But sacred art and even liturgical art has its place in the home. And one of the places that you can have it is the focus as a focus of prayer in the home, which is often called an icon corner, because it's more of a tradition, or spoken of as a tradition in the Eastern Church today, although it's always been part of the Church, East and West, just to have a place that you can focus your attention when you pray. Even the liturgical art has its place there, because we can pray liturgically at home if we pray the Divine Office or pray the Psalms and the Liturgy of the Hours. But that's not to say that we shouldn't have devotional art and devotions as well. It's not an either or, it's a both and, I think. And this is one of the great glories of the Church, is that the immense richness of our art and music and the culture attached to richly varied approaches to prayer and worship, I would say. And in your home, of course, you can choose what you really feel suits you and nourishes your prayer and worship.
In his book, The Way of Beauty, David Clayton writes, "The beauty of Catholic culture can speak to all, of course, but it is especially needed in trying to open the hearts of those of the post-Christian society in the West. These are people who are not Christians, but whose parents or grandparents were. The task here is more than simply making the information available to them. It is to impart to them the belief that the Church offers them a joyful life that is better than what they have now." Close quote. And in that offer of a joyful life, sacred art, beauty, plays a significant part, as it lifts us to God, who is the source of all joy, of all peace, and of all beauty. If you're interested in watching David Clayton's entire presentation, you can access it at the college website, wyomingcatholic.edu. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.